I'm Brian Carpenter, host of Fresh Air at 5, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another great episode of My EdTech Life. Thank you so much for joining us on this wonderful Tuesday, or it may be well into Wednesday, depending on where it is that you may be joining us around the world. But wherever you are, as always, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for all of your support. As you know, we appreciate all the likes, the shares, the follows. Thank you so much to our brand new YouTube subscribers as well, as you are contributing to our mission to get to the epic 1,000 subscribers there. So thank you all for hopping over, giving us a thumbs up, and subscribing. We really appreciate that. And as always, also just very appreciative of you joining us live, or if you're catching this on the replay as well. Thank you so much for the feedback. We really appreciate the downloads. We appreciate the listens. And I know that our guests definitely appreciate that feedback and that listen. And today I'm really excited because today I have just a great energetic guest. We were talking just a little bit, you know, pre-podcast, and it's just some great energy, and I'm just really excited to help amplify his story, share the work that he's doing. And so I would love to welcome to the show tonight Desmond Hasty. Desmond, how are you this evening?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I'm delighted that you're here. I'm really excited. Like I said, you know, it was great to see Elijah kind of post that you were on the podcast about a couple of weeks ago and everything. And he's just so great, such an awesome guy. And I've had the pleasure of, being on his podcast and him being on mine and meeting him in real life. And he's just a real genuine, great guy. So when he popped that up, I said, hey, this must be legit. You know, if Elijah's putting somebody out and, you know, calling on us, it's like, hey, that's what we're here for. So thank you so much for accepting the invite and being here this evening to share your story. So Desmond, for all our audience members that are joining us, whether they're joining us live or they're going to be catching this on the replay, who may not be very familiar with your work yet, or, you know, the work that you're doing through social media, tonight's the night for you to amplify your voice. So can you give us a little brief introduction and what your context is in the education space?
Yes. Well, I definitely don't have much of a social media presence, as you're telling me to introduce in my platform. However, I'm closely affiliated with EduMatch. Dr. Sarah Thomas, Mandy Freilich, and all of the wonderful authors. I work with them closely. I help them out with marketing. So I love doing stuff for EduMatch. That is pretty much most of my social media presence. I started early on when Twitter first came out. Now it's X. And that's pretty much what I do. I have a side business of doing social media for some people in EdTech. I've just been teaching, and I'm going to be more vocal on social media. I'm learning a lot of things, and I do want to have my voice out there. I love participating in podcasts. It's my second one in like 2 weeks. And chats. I love the chats for Twitter. I love talking and learning through that. So.
Excellent. Well, I'm excited, you know, and especially with all those skills and obviously working with EduMatch, that is definitely like golden. I mean, they just have so many wonderful educators that are part of that group, and obviously a lot of wonderful authors that are doing some amazing work there. So yeah. That's wonderful. So that is awesome. I mean, you are in there, you get to see it all, you get to learn from the best, and that is awesome. So I'm really excited that you're here, and obviously excited that, you know, like you said a little bit, that you wanted to get into podcasting. And now, I mean, you're getting into it because now you are a guest on podcast. So that's wonderful. So I'm just really excited, you know, for our audience members tonight to get to know a little bit more of you, who you are, aside from the work that you do, obviously, through EduMatch, but more of just that classroom feel, that classroom persona entity, that work that you do with our students. And obviously, we titled the podcast today, Empowering the Digital Generation, you know, and talking about tech. So I want to ask you, you know, where did you draw your passion for educational technology within the education space? And how has your philosophy in ed tech kind of been shaped as well?
That's a great question. My passion is just from my motivation to learn. As I mentioned on Elijah's podcast, my grandmother was a teacher and I really didn't get into it. I wanted to be a teacher when I was younger, but it was a list of other things I wanted to do. And I'm very reflective, even though I'm just very reflective. I like being present in the moment. And while growing up, I noticed my likes and dislikes about learning, as well as teachers, before I even, like, in hindsight, I was analyzing all the time and doing these things. And I said, you know what? I would love to teach one day, and I'm just going to be a teacher. And it came unexpectedly when I popped into a job at a private Catholic school in North Philly. And I got in and I said, you know what? I'm going to focus and do that. So that's where the desire came from. And I dove in headfirst, all in, and my passion and I guess my persistence and dedication is just reaching the students that I can see myself in. Like I have a master's plus, like most other people in education. And I did not get serious. I'm ashamed to say, but I did not get serious about learning and learning in school and grades until my master's degree, when I was earning my master's degree. So I just wasn't motivated. I didn't connect with the content nor the way it was being presented, the educators. And this is like from elementary school all the way up through my bachelor's degree. I mean, so I definitely tried to go a traditional route and was in and out of school a lot, but I persevered, I maintained my focus. And for anyone going through something, I can closely relate and align myself with, and I try to tap in and give them the resource that I didn't have, like that kind of light, you know, and that keeps me moving. It keeps me doing everything.
That is wonderful, you know, and that there's so much there that you mentioned that I want to unpack a little bit about two points that I want to highlight. But, you know, that's interesting. Number one, obviously listening to you say that it wasn't until your master's degree that really that's where, you know, you got engaged with the content and it was kind of things that were making sense. Can you maybe just elaborate a little bit more? Was it just because now you're in the master's program and was it the way the material was presented to you, or because, man, I really got to get this just so I can, you know, continue to work? Or, you know, can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I kind of resonate, or what you mentioned resonates a little with me, because it kind of reminds me of myself too, coming up, you know, K-12, where I wasn't necessarily like really immersed in the content, but once I got into my master's program, incidentally too, that's where I found like a lot more of excitement. And I don't know if it was because finally I was applying what I had learned or had been learning within the classroom setting, and now everything was clicking because I came in from a non-traditional route into education. So can you just tell us a little bit about on your side?
Yeah, absolutely. I relate with a lot of the things that you were saying. I had a non-traditional route as well, and I'm still going through it. I'm about to tweet. I just took my last class for teacher certification. So 15 plus years, not being certified. And like, I feel like I finally hit the mountaintop, you know, and it's crazy because that's similar to my educational experiences with, it took me a while, took me 8 years to get a traditional 4-year undergrad degree because I was in and out and just life happened, you know. But I mean, I never took my eyes off of the prize and I kept pushing. And similar to what you're saying, to answer your question directly, it was a little bit of a combination of things. I was recently married. I had my wife at the time, and I had a child, and I needed to make ends meet. I was teaching for about 4 or 5 years, and my prize was like, I'm going to get certified, and then I'll have like consistent income, and because I went the non-traditional route. And when I got into that master's program, kind of like head first, I was like, I'm going to give this my all. So like, all the things I acquired from my undergrad and the ways I was successful, I limited the things that were holding me back or the things that I did not do well. and I enhance and really focus on optimal. I mean, everything from optimal study times to going to tutors to doing my work as soon as I got it, staying up late, and all those things to sacrifice and get the grades I deserve. Unfortunately, the program was not that good in hindsight. However, I have right now, I've developed what I call it like my it's kind of like my learning lens. My learning lens has not been off since I attained my master's degree back in like 2013. I mean, so I'm convinced that whatever class I get into, I'm going to like attain the optimal grade, like be the best student I can be, because I spent so much of my time not doing that and not seeing the importance of it. And that's another way that I relate to my students. I try to blend, hey, like this is important. It may not be important now, but there are lessons in everything that you're doing, especially in school.
Absolutely. You know, and that's great that you mentioned that, you know, because again, a lot of what you're saying, I'm like, wow, like, you know, kind of in a way, how it comforts me a little bit that, man, I wasn't the only one that was going through that and or going through these non-traditional routes, and things happen, fork in the road moments and so on. But then, you know, through that perseverance and just kind of making it through, it just seems kind of like I see things a little bit different now within the education space. And coming into education, coming in from business and sales, and then obviously going into alternative certification programs and trying to learn the pedagogy and learning, you know, just what it is to be a teacher, I definitely always fell back more on that customer service and the sales skills. Yes. And now mixing that and understanding the pedagogy, and I'm like, hey, these are kind of the same thing. You know, like you got to sell the subject. You got to sell yourself. The students have to buy in, which kind of, you know, you did mention here towards the end, something that I did want to add that I really love that you said, that, you know, when you're working with students and you know, things that you've almost sometimes see yourself in them, and try to help them out. And I think that's something that is very important. So can you tell me a little bit about that, you know, in that spirit of man, like, I see your struggles, like maybe I've gone through that, like, let me help you out. Tell me about what your experience has been like, you know, dealing with that.
Absolutely. I appreciate you focusing on that part. I have 3 kids. My younger son is like my heart, especially since I'm teaching middle school now. I teach 6th to 8th grade in Eastern Shore, Maryland. So middle school takes a certain kind of person. I think all education, you got to love it or you shouldn't be doing it. And I'm more mature now to see my flaws, focus on my strengths, and present the best side of me, as well as be humbled and vulnerable for those students to see my weaknesses. So a perfect example is the learning lens, as I aforementioned, I have that learning lens on 24/7. So if I'm not learning from my students and from myself and reflecting, I'm learning from my son, and because he's in 8th grade. So I'm reflecting and I'm constantly like not leveraging each one, but learning and adapting. It's constantly adapting. So an example was today. I have a very challenging 7th grade class at the end of the day. And since Thanksgiving, they came back and I'm hearing teachers talking about what they're talking about. But I have had the best time teaching in terms of engagement and interaction and excitement for my content in my classes. And I start to question, I'm like, I'm just going with it. And it was nearing the end of my grad class. I changed my lens and my frame. And I said, you know what? I'm going to teach in a completely different way. So what I did was I started sitting next to students, especially the ones who were talkative and kind of off task. And I'm like giving them that one-on-one attention, and no lie, Fonz, the minute I did that, the most cantankerous kind of like excitable students, they just calmed down and they were locked into the project. And I was like, what? I mean, I could not even realize what they were doing, because I was locked in. Like, they're locked in, I'm showing them the stuff and they're taking the wheel. And like, for example, there were micro projects that they're doing about coding. I said, you know what, there are 8 projects in this one little unit. I would like them to get 4 and I'm gonna be good. I couldn't even say it because they were on like six already. And I'm like, wow, you guys are going, and then just keep on going. Let's go, you know. But by sitting next to them and breaking my mold of doing the same old, I love adapting. And I got the maximum out of those students. And I appreciate their humility. And oftentimes when students act out or they're off task, they need that attention, especially in middle school. And that's one of the reasons I like it. Like, they don't necessarily tell you what they need, but they sure show you. They definitely do.
That's great. You know, and a lot of that you said, you know, it almost seems like, you know, I'm hearing myself talk about the way that I taught in the classroom, which is great, you know. And I, one of the things that I love is you're absolutely right. Sometimes just that small thing of understanding who your student is, how they are, and maybe just some of their, you know, just behaviors, and being able to kind of tap into that in a way where, like you said, you know, if I just sit next to them, and then all of a sudden, man, they're just, like you mentioned, just so hyper-focused on what they're doing, and then they take off, and before you know it, it's like the whole class has already just laser focused on what it is that they needed to do. And oftentimes I love that you're able to tell and kind of read the room, because sometimes what happens, and I get it, you know, there's students that may be a little bit more or may need additional supports, or, you know, they are a little louder than a lot of the other students. And sometimes, you know, we take those disruptions, and then it just kind of disrupts the whole day or the whole class. But one thing that I did find useful, and maybe in the way that you did it too, was really knowing the students and really just those little things that kind of make them kind of tick a little bit and so on, and just use that as leverage to say, okay, if I know that the student at this time needs kind of just a break or is feeling antsy, then, hey, I have a desk in the back where they can work standing up, different stations to just kind of fit their learning style or how they feel more comfortable. And you're absolutely right. Sometimes just those little things just make that day that much better, and that project that much better, and the class that much better. And it's just getting to know the students. So I like that, and I appreciate that, because sometimes we really need to look at ourselves first before, you know, we start helping our students and turning the mirror on ourselves, like you mentioned earlier, you know, being very humble too and understanding that, you know, sometimes I may not always be right. Did I do the right thing? How am I helping my students? How am I expressing myself to them? You know, what kind of energy am I giving off? It's something that is so important and I absolutely love. But it seems like you are, in just speaking with you, just have that natural capability of, you know, being able to help your students, and because you really take the time to know them. And I think that's something that's important. So kind of going with that, I know I had asked the second part in that first question as far as your teaching philosophy. So now I'm curious, you know, just overall teaching philosophy, like, you know, if you had to just put it out there right now in a couple of words, what would you say your overall teaching philosophy is within the classroom setting?
My overall teaching philosophy is super, I would say super generic, and it's definitely not a traditional, classically trained educator. I want everyone to learn something. Like, if you leave my class learning something, I feel like my job is done. And the students, I think it weirds them out a little bit. I mean, I don't wear it across my chest. However, as traditional students do in any range of years of going to school, they get behind on projects or they just don't do certain projects. But if you're learning, you're growing. So my goal is, let's learn something. I taught high school. Most of my experience is high school in West Philly. So I would tell them the same thing, and I had a lot more freedom because they were more independent and in comparison to the middle school. But I would, every year I would make like a new course. I mean, and this was like back in 2008. So, I mean, I was making course about Microsoft certification and Excel and all those things. And then I saw some students using Adobe products, and I was like, what? Let's go ahead. So like I leveraged and I got some money to buy Adobe Master Collection. So, I mean, I had stuff that I haven't even heard about, but I was like, let's go, let's just dive right in. We're just going to do that. And I actually was going to tell you about a time with technology where I was teaching some complicated Illustrator project, you know, and I ended up making, and this is before everything got instructional and things going on really like TikToks and all of that. So I made an instructional video, like a screencast for them to do the parts of this project because their focus was waning when it came to reading the text. And there weren't any instructional videos. So I made one about this complex gradient type Illustrator project that was like 20 pages long, but I broke it down into short clips, kind of like a predecessor to a TikTok. And the students were super successful, but they were working independently. I'm like, this is what it's about. Like, just keep going, guys. You know, so.
I love that. You know, you've hit on a couple of things too, and I'm glad you segued right into the tech, which is the next thing that we're going to be talking about. But I think it was just really the importance of, you know, again, going back to knowing your students, facilitating things for them, understanding and simplifying certain things in such a way that, again, you had them working pretty much individually on their own. And now, you know, you took something that's complicated. You broke it down into like little mini bite sessions that they just walk through with ease. And then, of course, they start helping each other out. They may be watching the same video. They can rewatch. And that's like, again, what it's all about too, just kind of giving them that independent practice as well. So I absolutely love that. But I think also what I love about you that you said was, even with your excitement that you have for the classroom, and even though you may just learned about something that you aren't scared to just say, all right, guys, here, let's go ahead and do this. And I'm going to kind of share with you the little that I know. And we're just going to see where it goes from there and giving them the opportunity also to do the learning. So it kind of shows me also that you are able to take risks and, you know, being able to just put yourself out there and also understanding, you know, that really humble spirit that you have of, it's okay that I may not know everything, but we're in it together. We're going to learn it together. And again, that really resonates with me too as well, because, you know, I got in trouble so many times with one of my principals because I was just taking these risks. And absolutely. I remember one time we were doing scratch coding. I had just come back from a conference and I was like, oh my gosh, this is what we're going to do. Get your Chromebooks out. And they were actually learning how to program and create the planets. So because we were covering planets, and I had an AP that came in and just kind of looked around, and she didn't understand what was happening, but she kind of looked around, but the kids were engaged. I mean, they were loud, but not loud, like troublemaker loud. They were loud, excited, loud, learning, you know, very vocal. And they were just, you know, helping each other out. Then a couple minutes later, then I get my principal comes in and says, hey, Mr. Mendoza, I need to talk to you. And he pulls me out. He goes, I hear that all your kids are doing is just playing video games and everything. I was like, wait a minute, whoa, whoa, hold on. Let me go ahead and show you what they're doing. And I walked them through and they were, you know, obviously doing their coding and doing the scratch code, with which later led to a code club and so on. But again, going back to what you said, it just seems like it's okay that you may not know everything, but just put it in the students' hands. And maybe, like you said, also take those complex concepts, break them down into little bite-sized manageable chunks, and you can see a huge difference too as well. So that's great. And that's what I love about the tech too, allowing you to do those things. So that's wonderful. Yeah. Excellent. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the tech integration. So can you tell us a little bit more about what your current role is right now within your school? And obviously, like, how important tech is, you know, or tech skills are for the classes that you may be, you know, teaching at this moment. You know, tell us a little bit about what you're covering.
Well, since the pandemic, I started my own business as an instructional technology specialist, and my main client was the School District of Philadelphia. So that's when I was doing kind of tech coaching, and I was thrown into that, and that was a lot of fun. But pandemic hit like the year that I started my business, and I got a year guaranteed, and that was all. So I was doing more tech support before that. I landed this job through recruiters down in Maryland, and I am a computer science educator in the classroom. So I don't have much influence school-wide, but we have a great network where we're sharing resources, and it's kind of like each one teach one kind of. So if a teacher's using, I picked up a couple of things that they're doing in the classroom. So I use some tech tools in class, and then the ones that I find to be successful for me, I'll share those along. So not like a master, but like I'm a specialist, and then we'll play around as teachers and get students to do it. But it only takes one classroom to get going, and then it'll slowly grow through everyone, which I really like that. So
absolutely. And you're absolutely right. You know, and it's really just that too as well, where you have maybe like early adopters being able to help you out and get the voice out. And then all of a sudden you see like, hey, what are they doing? And I want to try that. And that's really all it takes. So that's great. Now I want to ask you, you know, what in this role, you know, what have you seen have been some of the common barriers that you faced maybe at the very beginning? Or maybe just tell us a little bit about, I guess, barriers when you're trying to introduce new tech. Do you see that there's still a lot of teachers that are very reluctant to use the tech and maybe trying to get back to the way things used to be before pandemic? Or do you kind of see that comfort level continuing to grow and evolve and flourish?
Well, when I was a high school teacher, there was definite barriers to entry. Like the teachers were like, oh no, we can't do this. However, middle school is more a familial vibe. So if familiar with, in the sense of sixth grade teachers or sixth grade teachers in seventh grade, and I'm an elective teacher, so unified arts. So we're all bunched together, but we trust our colleagues tremendously. So if someone is using something, they'll either pitch it or they'll come and check it out and like, oh, well, let's teach me. And it's more of like a group effort. So I feel within reason, if anything's going right, they'll share their highlight, their successes, and they'll adopt it, you know? But I mean, we have a very open community of everyone sharing resources and like teaching each other, and it's really cool.
That is really cool. You know, today we were doing a presentation at Region 1, our service center. So shout out to Region 1. It was the AI and EDU Summit, and I presented a presentation called Kiss Your AI, which is keep it simple and streamlined. But really, that's always been my philosophy as an instructional tech, just keep it as simple as possible and keep it streamlined. But, you know, within that presentation was always letting teachers know also as well that when we are introducing new tech, it's you're on your own journey, but you're not alone though. But it's like, this is your journey. And so sometimes, you know, I love the fact that you have this pretty much a PLC in the sense that they all come together and share. So they get to learn from one another. And sometimes, you know, the outcomes for one class may not be the same outcomes for another class, even though it may be the same tool. But I love the fact that you have this available, because then teachers can see what works for them. I know one of my biggest things that I see that, I guess, you know, one of the last questions that I have is your edu kryptonite. My edu kryptonite is when we have educators that go from platform to platform to platform to platform to platform, and they really don't go in deep. It's very superficial and they don't go in deep. And so one of the things that I tell all my teachers is the tech is like an instrument. When you learn a guitar, you're not going to know the chords right away. It may be uncomfortable. Obviously, once you start playing, you know, it's going to hurt your fingertips, but then you start building those calluses. And then before you know it, you're playing some wonderful melodies. So I tell them that, because sometimes they hop over to other apps that do the exact same thing, but because they may have just one little extra bell and whistle that doesn't really make that much of a difference into the end result and to the learning that's taking place. So I want to ask you, is this something that is very familiar to you in the sense that you do see this, or are your teachers pretty kind of low laid back and being like, hey, I just need 2 to 3 and I'm good? Or do you see the app hopping?
I think it's a nice mix, honestly. I mean, I don't really talk too much to the other teachers. My department is like, they use a ladder. They're pretty much low key. They have their apps they're using and they're going with it. I don't see too much app hopping. which is good. I'm sure some teachers do it, but our teachers are kind of like good with what they're doing. And similar to what you're saying, they like to do deep dives. They like to look into what there is going on, and then they'll knock it out and they'll keep stay with it because it's a familiarity thing, and they'll try to do it unless they come across a limitation, and then they'll try to find something that is better for them, or all encompassing.
There you go. That's great. And, you know, so that's so good to hear, because, you know, that's very important. And like you said, it, just having that support and being able to support one another, that is something that is huge. And I know many times we would love to have so many apps and obviously be able to please every teacher. But sometimes, you know, we have budget constraints. Actually, a lot of times we have budget constraints. We all know that. So I am always trying to research things that are like free 99 or less. Right, and right, if they're free 99 or less, then okay, let's go ahead and share it. And so on. But again, always being very cautious too, because I don't want there also to be any issues where now the tech becomes a burden because it's, oh, too many tools, and then teachers are not too familiar or don't know which exact tool to use for certain things. So one of the things that our district has done, and ever since COVID, has just really kept a kind of standardized approach to technology. There's really four main platforms that we have, and not to say that you can't use other onesies and twosies that are out there that teachers that feel comfortable with, but at least by maintaining those four platforms, that has helped bring in that consistency, but also allowing teachers to really go in a little bit deeper with what is already there. So that's been a huge plus. But again, the fact that you do have early adopters is a big bonus, especially if they are in schools that, you know, they can be that extra set or that extra coach that's there on site when, right, you know, somebody like myself that is in charge of 14 schools in one district, I can't be everywhere at once. So really those early adopters that are just feel comfortable with the tech, it's always great that they have, you know, meetings just like the way that you're describing, those little faculty PDs. And that's wonderful where they have those shares. So let's kind of change the conversation a little bit now. I know we talked about the teachers, but now I want to talk about the students, at least from your observation, as far as students in tech. What are you seeing that is good? What are you seeing that may not be so good? So can you tell us a little bit about your experience with that?
With like the students performing or just socially?
Yeah, well, yeah, just with technology, performance-wise, and then we'll talk about that social aspect too, because I know we were talking today about, you know, Generation Alpha and just kind of, you know, different generations, the way that they really either use tech or the understanding of tech. So what are some of your observations, you know, at least with your students that you're seeing now as far as tech for, you know, their classwork and then tech just outside of school use?
Well, the screen time is major. I became a tech coach during the pandemic, and then I did not experience COVID, you know? I didn't experience COVID in a classroom, and it has changed my perception. I actually had my first, we still do kind of like a hybrid day or an abroad day where they're home and we're doing that. I had my first ever like a Zoom classroom kind of thing a month ago. So I was like, well, this is very, very different. They seemed more productive. Oddly enough, they seem more productive on that Zoom classroom than they did when I see them every day. And it blew my mind. I'm like, I don't understand. Like, I just don't know. So that is the challenge. The students that I've encountered in the past, I've been at this job, I'm 2.5 years now, and they love the independence, but when they're together, it's socially awkward. They don't know when to start, when to finish, when to manage their time. They're inundated by Chromebooks or whatever, getting around whatever system to play a game. Yet, I mean, and I've tried lots of different things. I've tried, let's print some assignments out. So, I mean, I call it the rule of three. In class, I'll write something on the board. I'll have it posted to Schoology, and then I have a printout. And then I read things, and it just still doesn't click sometimes. So, I mean, that's when I have to flip it upside down and do kind of like a small group projects and to make sure that the flow is still moving. But I'm still learning how to get them moving and motivated. And it's, there's such a range of, I don't know if it's ability or aptitude, but I mean, I have some super, super high performers. So like if the class is on project 8, these high performers are on 10, like hungry. So out of a class of 25, I have 3 of them. Everyone else is mixed in between. Then I have 3 on the opposite end that are just super needy or super off task. And I'm just like, whoa, what is going on? So, I mean, I'm still learning the system, but overall, generally speaking, I believe they're still learning how to be a student like back here, because when COVID hit and it was very real there at home, most of these students were in like 4th grade. So, I mean, I didn't know how it looked then. And of course, they didn't have to be as independent as we're requiring now, but they struggle being a student and finding out their flow.
Yeah. You know, and that's interesting that you mentioned that. I know some of our discussion today was what we're noticing in our classrooms with students. And I think you mentioned that they work very well independently, you know, for the most part. And that's one of the things that was a very common thing that was shared amongst all educators within the room, is that they're great at that individual work when you just, you know, they're on their own, they find their flow state, but they're able to be creative. They're able to turn in some great things to you, learning artifacts that are just great. And of course, like you said, different levels of competencies, but it's getting done. But then once that's gone, it's that socialization that is very difficult. It's all of a sudden, it's like everything just goes quiet. You know, when you're giving them time for discourse or discussion and so on, it's like you can hear crickets drop. But then if you were able to do the same thing and pose the same kind of questions, either within a particular app or anything, man, they would give you some amazing and wonderful answers, and they give you some great feedback. And the funny thing is that they give themselves amazing feedback among students when they have a discussion board. At least that's what I've noticed, right? But they're not able to kind of verbalize that in a way, which is like, wow, you know, this is very interesting. Yes. And yeah. So, and then just a quick anecdote that I wanted to add about COVID, when we first came back, full on brick and mortar, walked into a teacher's 9th grade classroom. So mind you, those students were, I guess, maybe starting in 5th grade when COVID hit, and then we finally came back. But it was interesting that we walked in and then we made an observation. We're like, hey, wait a minute. It's like all the boys are on one side and all the girls are on one side. And I asked the teacher, I was like, did you arrange the desk like this? They're like, no, I don't even give them a seating chart. This is the way they all got. And we kind of just started thinking, it's like they missed that awkward junior high dance phase where that's what you would see. And they didn't know how to socialize with one another. And that was very interesting. So yeah, that's my little anecdote there. So going back to your classroom setting and the students that you're working with, and just through your experience and what you're seeing, not just at your school, but I mean, through your own research, through Twitter, through your work with EduMatch, what you hear, because I know you're surrounded by amazing educators, and I know that you do a lot of the chats too as well. What are some of the things though, just based from, I should say directly from you, from your feeling, not really what is out there, but what do you feel that the education system or that we could do better to help our students, prepare them for those, for the future, you know, the future of work? So obviously, you know, they can manage devices for the most part, but, you know, aside from that, what are some other things that you feel that are very needed for students to be prepared?
Well, great question. I think creativity is still lacking for the students. I mean, apps and things are great. And I read a book, I believe it was by Dave Pink. I'm not certain, but the book said that most of these students who graduate, they're getting CEOs that have more of an artistic background because the creativity is stifled. You know, I mean, I think what needs to be enhanced and encouraged more would be creativity. And one, I guess a subset of that would be entrepreneurial spirit. spirit, like being more of an entrepreneur. I listen to a business podcast. It's like a daily thing for me. And there they spoke about a creator camp. And if I were to talk to my students about that, they would be all over that. But as educators, we need to tap into that entrepreneurial spirit, because I think every generation had that, but now it's like in their face all the time. As I go to TikToks, if you did a survey on name five influencers, they would do it no problem. Like they would be able to, and I can't tell you people like that. Like I just don't watch or follow those, but that is part of their upbringing. So, I mean, they want to tap into that. My son, like I said, eighth grade, he's told me about three creative type of things that careers that he wants to get into. And it's that entrepreneurial spirit that he has. So, I mean, I think that would be the top thing. If we can, as educators, if we can tap into that more in any regard, you know, throughout all curricula, like that would increase buy-in a lot.
Definitely. Yeah. And I agree with you. I think it's, that ties along with really making that real world connection, you know, and seeing what they're doing. I mean, I know when I was in my fifth grade classroom, again, going back to that, one of the things that I did just to help motivate kids is also find that representation and giving them that spirit of like, hey, that's what I want to be. And hey, I can do that, because we would bring in guests through Zoom or a Google Meet, or I would invite guests to come to the campus and talk to the students and so on. And I can honestly say that really helped the students say like, oh, okay, this makes sense. There's that connection. And I agree with you with that entrepreneur spirit. I mean, even now, just for myself, recently, it's that entrepreneur spirit has been coming out a little bit more and learning and just wanting to continue to grow and learn. And I think that's something that is very important for the students to see, you know, the value that they can bring, but also tapping into their own creativity. Oftentimes I think it's like we try so hard to be somebody else when in fact the person that you are is definitely something that was needed to see or needed to be seen or needed to be heard, because we need something a little bit different than what is out there and so on. But so I think that's something too that a lot of students need to really embrace their individuality. And oftentimes we know that imitation is flattery, but you can only have so many influencers that are doing the exact same thing. Right. We're trying to do the exact same thing. Yeah. And sometimes just being your authentic self is just something fabulous that the world needs. And so I'm all for that too as well. So that's awesome.
I wanted to add that adaptability would be another thing. So yes. For example, if they're following the influence, I read a book a long time ago. I think it was called Masters of Enterprise. Kind of old, I would say 80s or so, but it talked about the pioneers of America. So the Henry Fords and I completely messed up. But anyway, the older entrepreneurs, like the first, like old money, how they started. And a lot of students, I don't know if people think about that, when they think about inventors and entrepreneurs, they usually aren't successful with their first thing. You know, they think of one thing and it may fail, or they may get money to spawn off to another thing. Like, I mean, so for example, Drake, I was just speaking with Elijah about rap, and Drake started on Degrassi, which I've never even seen, but he started as an actor and his passion was music. But I mean, that was kind of like that vehicle. So while he's not inventing, it's kind of that, but he adapted, you know. And if students want to do that entrepreneurial route, I think it should be fostered. At the same time, the adaptability needs to be fostered and it needs to be more real. My son, again, I keep going back to my son, but a lot of these students, when I was in high school also, they want to be professional athletes. I'm all about that. But number one, are you doing what a professional athlete would be? Are you getting your exposure? Are you doing those things? Are you participating in as many sports as possible? And are you holding up your academic end? While that's going on and when it's going on, what's the backup plan? That's the adaptability piece. You and I talk about non-traditional teacher routes. We got a taste of teaching. It was like, yo, this is what we want to do. Now, how can we bridge the gap of making amends to make sure that we are highly qualified educators, you know? I mean, and I think the students need to hear more real stories from educators and know that while there may be some stories that are like shiny and perfect and lined up, a lot of it, kind of like America, is like a melting pot. Things don't always go through, but if you have that goal and you're focused on something, be it technology or sports or being the creator, you got to be adaptable and flexible. Keep the side in mind and keep on pushing.
I love that. Absolutely. No. And again, yeah, you're a great example on talk about adaptability, you know, coming in from a business and sales background and then falling into education, but and then absolutely falling in love with everything about education. And 17 years later, you know, here I am, you know, similar stories with you, you know, going into education and now following through. And that's so important. And you're absolutely right, you know, to be able to reconcile all of those things, being adaptable, being one, some of the things that I love to add is like, I always tell people the three words that have helped me in my transition into education and be, I guess, here this long in education have been improvise, adapt, and overcome. Those big three words right there have been very helpful to me and instrumental. And of course, adaptability being one of them, definitely huge. Appreciate it, Desmond. Well, Desmond, it's been an amazing chat. I know I can keep going on and on, and maybe we'll just do a part two, you know, maybe in a couple of weeks or in a couple of months or something, but I would absolutely love to have you back just to continue the conversation. But thank you so much for this wonderful chat this evening. And like I said, I definitely, definitely filled my bucket today. And, you know, just to have you here, hear your story, amplify your story and your thoughts and everything. So I'm really excited about putting this show out and, you know, making sure that all our listeners, you know, definitely get to know who you are and just, you know, continue to follow your work. And, you know, that that would also give you that, I guess, motivation to continue to put more stuff out there, man, and get yourself out there more, because you definitely have a lot of great things to share. So I really appreciate it. But before we go, Desmond, we always know, if you have seen the show, we always end the show with these last three questions. So hopefully you're ready, because here we go. So Desmond, as we know, every superhero has a weakness. For example, Superman, we know that kryptonite caused his weakness or was a major pain point for him. So I want to ask you, Desmond, in the current state of education, what would you say is your current edu kryptonite?
My current edu kryptonite would be an inconsistent or lack of curriculum. As an elective teacher, especially with my discipline of computer science, if the curriculum isn't right, I'm just like grabbing resources and I'm unorganized and I'm not building the students up and giving them the opportunities that they need. So, I mean, that is my kryptonite. Absolutely.
There you go. That is a great answer for sure. All right, Desmond, question number two, if you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it be and why?
Thought long and hard about this one. I'm going to go. I have two slogans, and I know you'll definitely pull something out of these. One, I love learning through conversation. So one would be discourse saves lives. That's one that I thought about. It's absolutely true, or it can enhance and all of those things. Another thing is I want the discourse to be continuously flowing, and I'm a big advocate of parental involvement and for students to initiate that. So I'm thinking more of like a t-shirt, like have you talked to a student today? So not necessarily like your child. However, everyone is going to school at some point or learning something at some point. And you can learn a lot from what people are going through, the adversities and the struggles in the classroom or just learning as an adult educator. So just ask them, like, have you talked to anyone that is learning something new today?
I love that. That is great. I can see that as being like a double billboard sort of, where you can kind of see like the first one, like discourse saves lives or enhances lives, like, you know, either one. And then that next one coming up, have you talked to a student today? You know, that those are great. They're wonderful. Those are golden, man. I appreciate that. All right, Desmond. And, you know, this one might be fitting. I don't know. I mean, being that you do a lot of work with EduMatch, but let's say that you had to author a book starting tomorrow. What would your book be about?
That's a good question. I have a hobby of like studying finance, and as I teach my children about that. So I would love to do a children's book about finance. So very basic. It would be kind of like a collection of books, but it would be very basic of like saving and the importance of it to getting more complex, but for an elementary student to like read and understand. So illustrated that whole thing about finances.
There you go. I like that. And that's actually very useful. I think from the younger they learn about finances and financial literacy, that could definitely help out a long ways, you know, throughout being pretty much anytime, you know, even as they get older, because that's something that is very important, understanding financial literacy. Because boy, I tell you what, when I became an adult, I was like, why didn't anybody ever teach me about this? You know, what's this FICA? Why are they taking this much money off of my check? Gosh. And what is gross pay? And why does my gross look different than my net? And things like that. It's a shocker. You know, it's really crazy. But I definitely love that idea. And I could definitely see that happening. Desmond, again, thank you so much for joining me this evening. I really appreciate everything you shared. I really appreciate your passion, and it really shows, you know, through your answers, through the way that you speak about students, you speak about work and everything. And of course, when you speak about your family as well. So thank you for sharing your story and your passion and the work that you're doing. And I definitely wish you the best. And for any of my other podcast friends that are out there, please make sure you reach out to Desmond. Get him on your show. You're going to definitely have a fabulous time, and he's definitely going to bring it. So thank you again, Desmond. Have a wonderful evening. But for all our guests, for all our viewers too that joined us live today, thank you so much for the likes. We had a lot of love coming in through LinkedIn, you know, a lot of little hearts coming in and cool. So on. So thank you so much for that. And please make sure that you visit our website at myedtech.life, where you can check out this amazing episode and the other 256 wonderful episodes with educators, creators, solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, all kinds of founders and co-founders. I promise you will find something that'll help you find some knowledge nuggets to sprinkle onto what you are already doing great. So we definitely appreciate all of your support. And if you're not following us on socials yet, please make sure you hop on all socials and just look us up at MyEdTechLife, at MyEdTechLife. And we are pretty much everywhere. Connect with us. Shoot us a DM. If you're interested in being a guest or you want to recommend somebody to be a guest, please make sure you just visit our website, hit the contact me, and, you know, just send us your message. And we would love to hear from you as well. So thank you so much, my friends, for everything and for all of your support. And until next time, don't forget, stay techie.